A perfect place. Fresh water. Poetry and rocket science. Multicoloured sandstone and bleached white chalk cliffs. Of lighthouse and piracy. Where Marconi pioneered wireless radio telegraphy and the birthplace of England's greatest scientific polymath, Robert Hooke. Of chairlifts, early portrait photography, and one of the world's largest rock festivals. Of fossils, sandcastles, and family picnics. Of erosion and passing. Of metallic blue and crimson sunsets. The sublime interface between earth, sea, and sky. Freshwater. The civil parishes of Freshwater and Totland are at the western tip of the Isle of Wight, a diamond-shaped island conveniently oriented like a compass rose just a few kilometres the south of the lower latitudes of England, or the mainland, as we islanders like to call it. In this talk, we will complete a clockwise coastal journey from Compton Bay to Yarmouth. Is this 20 kilometres of geographic appendage worthy of the title of a perfect place? I think it is, especially if we briefly dwell on what perfect means. From a no-nonsense, rational engineering perspective, perfection implies an optimal solution to a set of requirements. On a personal level, and this is a personal talk, Freshwater's landscape, history, and cultural heritage align very closely with my own and somewhat eclectic interests. My requirements for an interesting life. Alternatively, we may associate the more romantic idea of the sublime, a place imbued with a natural beauty which inspires a sense of aliveness to all who experience this land. Words and pictures, arts and science, geography and history, adventure, contemplation, home. This is me, and this is Freshwater. Straight out of Compton, NWA. That is, Needles with Alum, rather than the controversial and rather potty-mouthed Los Angeles hip-hop group of the late 1980s that my school friends would covertly listen to using their Sony Walkman personal cassette players in the playgrounds of West Wight Middle School, which is now a housing estate. The white cliffs of Tennyson Down, tapering to the iconic 30-metre-high chalk stacks of the Needles, form the western backdrop to Compton Bay. My personal place of pilgrimage. This is a wild section of mostly sandy beach, subject to significant erosion, which often reveals the fossilised remains of the island's prehistoric past. It is a reasonable surf break and boasts a small shipwreck which emerges from the waves at low tide. There is something about the place which comforts and invigorates, and it has particular meaning to me. I spent countless summer days with my extended family, moving from body surfing in the sea to the creation of extravagant ball runs in the sand, to the promise of gastronomic delights and cold orange squash from my grandmother's yellow plastic icebox. The gentle boom of the breaking waves is one of the most soothing sounds I know. Human, animal, and machine noise keep me awake, but I've been known to sleep peacefully through the wildest turbulence that the weather wizard can conjure. The unbroken horizon to the south is a canvas to paint your thoughts and a perfect foundation to build models of the mind. I love reading and thinking at Compton. The residual warmth of the sand during sunset and the subtle aroma of earth and seawater evoke vivid memories of childhood, of returning home, sandy and swaddled in warm toweling robes, in a green mini clubman with leather seats and surprising suspension, with a whirring sound like it was always in reverse. Compton is also where my beloved grandfather, Bob French, of Saunders Row, British Hovercraft Corporation, and HMS Belfast, who educated me through stories, drawings, and cold banana and custard, passed away. From Compton, we head west to Freshwater Bay. An irony indeed, as the water is entirely saline. Just inland is Dimbola Lodge, home to the pioneering Victorian female photographer Julia Margaret Cameron, and more recently the scene of cake-fueled open mic evenings that my father and I have often performed at. From Farringford House to the huge granite cross standing 147 metres above sea level is a testament to Tennyson, who lived there for 40 years until his death in 1892. Where far from noise and smoke of town, I watch the twilight falling brown, all round a careless, ordered garden, close to the ridge of a noble down. The current fortunes of the island are mixed, and there is perhaps much wistful rose tintery amongst the more artistic of residents. However, 'tis better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all. One such revival has been quite successful, and that is the Isle of Wight Pop Festival, which of course you must immediately forget as it is conveniently timed to coincide with your IGCSE and Pre-U examinations. Over a sultry week in August 1970, Afton Down, which overlooks Compton, was the site of the Isle of Wight Festival. It was attended by up to 700,000 people, much bigger than Woodstock, and over six times the local population. It had a sublime lineup, including Miles Davis, The Who, Joni Mitchell, Emerson, Lake and Palmer, The Doors, Free, and Jimi Hendrix. It was indeed a message to love, but probably had really bad toilets. The walk up to the Tennyson Monument from Freshwater Bay is always invigorating for the thighs and calves, and also for the mind when one turns around and contemplates the yacht-filled Solent on the left, and on the right the moody English Channel and its rugged littoral, culminating in the Undercliff and the quirky theme park of Blackgang Chine. From the summit there is a gentle stretch of trim grassy downland which dramatically tapers to a cluster of buildings. This is the Needles Battery, which overlooks the sea-only accessible and chalk strata wonderland of Scratchell's Bay to the south, and the multicoloured sand geologist's paradise of Alum Bay to the north. Alum Bay derives its name from the presence of sulphide ions contained within the yellow gerosite encrustations which form part of a pastel-shaded cliff panorama. Black lignitic compressed plant matter, green glauconite clays, white quartz sands, and red and yellow hued iron oxide limonites provide the chemical basis of a palette which is used as a backdrop for tranquil beachside picnics, exciting chairlift ride, or sand in glass tube touristic souvenirs. But Alum Bay and the Needles are a place of much wider scientific importance. Guglielmo Marconi helped refine his invention of the wireless radio telegraph here in 1897. Pretty much all of modern communications and remote sensing technology, from mobile phones to radar, stem from Marconi's pioneering experiments. Around the same time, at the end of the 19th century, the Needles Battery was being established as a naval defence, and was eventually equipped with three 9.2-inch breech-loading guns, which could each fire a shell weighing 172 kilograms. During World War II, anti-aircraft guns were also installed at the site, and both sets of weapons were used against the Luftwaffe and German U-boats. After the war, the site was decommissioned, and then transformed into a secret rocket-testing base. Between 1956 and 1972, 27 rockets were tested at the High Down site. Over 200 engineers and scientists worked in a complex of buildings, gantries and refurbished bunkers during this time. James Bond, Star Trek and Thunderbirds made real. The geography and privacy afforded by this tip of the island enabled the Black Knight prototype ballistic missiles to be fully tested without actually launching. Hugely strong gripping structures would hold the rockets in place while the kerosene and hydrogen peroxide fueled engines blasted their exhaust over Scratchell's Bay. By the 1970s, the project to develop a UK-designed delivery vehicle for a nuclear deterrent was scrapped in favour of buying American equipment, a government policy that seems to continue to this day, much to the bafflement and frustration of anyone with an interest in engineering. Perhaps the apogee of the rocket testing site was the development of the Black Arrow system, which was successfully used to launch the Prospero satellite into orbit. At present, this is the only British-built satellite to be launched by a British-built rocket. It is still transmitting radio signals to this day and should orbit the Earth for over 100 more years. And, you guessed it, as soon as Prospero was launched, the UK government cancelled the project in favour of Concorde. Apparently, they could see no future in satellite-based communications. Today, this industry is worth about $250 billion. From Allen Bay, we head east, over the spectacular purple heather of Hedden Warren to Totland Bay. Unlike the exciting surf of Compton, this is an often sheltered spot, which is excellent for swimming around expensive motorboats. A tree-lined grass terrace extends for about 500 metres parallel to the bay, perfect for picnics. Above the beach is an aptly named restaurant called The Waterfront. A wonderful place to listen to live music while you contemplate a world-class sunset and the gentle lapping of waves. Or, depending on your perspective on life, a wind-lashed near gazebo of a structure with parking that will test the nerve of overconfident recently qualified drivers. A delightful section of the Isle of Wight coastal path takes you past Colwell Bay, with its numerous identikit holiday apartments, past the blocky Fort Albert to the former barracks of Fort Victoria. Much of this structure is in a state of disrepair, although it still contains an aquarium and a planetarium within its former gun emplacement arches. A further kilometre or two takes you to the perennially pretty harbour town of Yarmouth. It is exactly as its name suggests, and is a colourful abode of gleaming yachts, shops selling expensive deli-style food, shops selling even more expensive nauticalia, and expensive houses which shelter the wealthy patrons of these yachts and shops. My parents live a few kilometres east in a little rural village called Ningwood. Every week I would hitch an unfailingly exciting ride to First Yarmouth Sea Scouts in the sporty Saab owned by the Thomases, who own the nearby dairy farm. I joined the Beavers when I was 6, progressed to Cubs and then to Sea Scouts until I was 15. I owe so much to the Taplins, who admirably ran these groups. I still regularly kayak on the Yar, but can no longer tie the special knot in our eminently practical triangular bandage necktie. I had a lot of badges. At Yarmouth, one can board the car ferry to Lymington, and from there the arboreal delights of the New Forest and the rest of the mainland are easily accessible. It is better to bring a bicycle, though, as the cost of a return car ticket is eye-wateringly expensive. The slow, half-hour crossing of the Solent is fabulous. If you do it, brave the elements and watch the proceedings from the open sun deck. It is tranquility distilled, until the rocking of the ship sets the car alarms off. Freshwater and its coastal Totlandish environs are my commendation as a perfect place. It attains much of its perfection by constant renewal by action of wind and sea. The water may not be drinkable, but these invigorating, kinetic shores are always fresh in a dynamic sense. They are alive and unstagnant. Perfection in human beauty is not to be found in bleached teeth, flawless skin plastic, enrobed in beige. It requires a willingness to embellish a quirk and indulge in colour. It is also an embrace of the reality of time and the ability to juxtapose heritage upon a transient present. In life's cocktail, a dash of wistful melancholia is required to fully accentuate the zest of now. As Tennyson wrote, "Tears, idle tears, I know not what they mean. Tears from the depths of some divine despair rise in the heart and to gather to the eyes in looking on the happy autumn fields." And though much is taken, much abides, and though we are not now that strength which in old days moved heaven and earth, that which we are one equal temper of heroic hearts. Tennyson said, "Knowledge comes, but wisdom lingers." I hope with all sincerity that this is your experience of Winchester this year. Hope smiles from the threshold of the year to come, whispering it will be happier. Thank you.